Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 8th day of June, Anno Domini 2019, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Now, I think nothing happened this week.
Not too much.
Of any import whatsoever. Oh, there was a small announcement from some little company. The heck's the name of it again? Apple. On Monday, Apple held this year's Worldwide Developer Conference, or WWDC, or as the Cognoscenti call it, dub-dub, because they're far too important to use 8 syllables, where 2 will do. A lot of stuff was announced. Here's an overview, and we only have 2 hours, so I can't really hit everything.
That was a 2.5-hour keynote.
Right. The newest version of the Mac OS, Catalina, is the newest version of the operating system, but it's the stuff inside that's interesting. iTunes is being broken up into Apple Music, Apple Podcasts, and the Apple TV app. If you have a newer Mac, you can use your iPad as a second monitor using Sidecar. There will be a new assistive technology in Catalina called Voice Control, which was actually very cool. Apple hit security hard during the keynote, and Catalina, Gatekeeper checks all apps for security problems and protects data from unauthorized access. It also works with Approve on the Apple Watch, so you can tap your watch for approval, too. Now, all Macs with the T2 security chip support Activation Lock, which should make them less attractive to thieves. And the Find My app works for the Mac and the iPad, just like it did for the iPhone, so they changed the name from Find My iPhone to Find
Right. My. It always did work, but it just felt weird saying, go to Find My iPhone to see where you left your Mac.
Right.
So we always called it Find My Device.
Yeah, that's what I would have called it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Find My is just like, find my what?
Yeah, really.
It's like, do you want to come with? With what? With who? With what with? Finish the sentence. At any rate, they also announced sign in with Apple, assuming you trust them more than you trust Google or Facebook. One thing I really like is the ability to hide your address and create a random one-time forwarder. That's very convenient. I mean, you can do that, but they make it just click here. So that's very nice.
Convenient.
Yeah. Screen time on the Mac gives users insights into how they spend time in apps and on websites and the tools to help decide how to spend their time. Of course, new APIs and tools for developers were announced, including a new Write Once, Run on Any Apple Device initiative. Photos is catching up with Google Photo. Maps is catching up with Google Maps. Mail is catching up with, well, everybody. Notes does search better, and Reminders is redesigned and from the reaction less confusing. A lot of time was spent on Minecraft AR for some reason. With that and the emojis, they were really hitting the 11-year-old crowd hard. Siri gets an upgrade. It can now play live radio, which honestly I had assumed it could always do. It has shortcuts, so you can bundle a bunch of commands into one, which honestly I had assumed it could always do, because both of those things have been available on the Google site for
a long
years.
Time.
They were separate apps. Now they're built into the OS.
And it now uses neural text-to-speech, which makes it sound a lot more natural, more like Google Assistant or the Alexa, I'll say. Apple is finally acknowledging that the iPad isn't just a big iPhone that can't make calls, and introduced a whole new operating system that the cleverly named iPad OS. It has some nice multitasking features. iCloud now supports file sharing, which frankly I'm shocked that it didn't. And all they announced 4 operating systems, Mac OS Catalina, iPad OS, Watch OS, and TV OS. And of course they announced a new Mac Pro, which starts at $11,000 with the monitor. Unless you also want the wheels or the monitor stand, which is another $1,000 all by itself. Got to be honest, when a monitor stand costs more than a brand new iPhone, something is skewed.
Yeah.
So are you lusting after the new Mac Pro? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966 5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I got to be honest, there were some things where I thought to myself, and I said a couple of them in here, where I thought to myself, the Mac couldn't do that already? Because we've been doing it on the Google side forever, and I just assumed
they were just separate operations.
Most of the stuff it can do that. They're just making it easier. They're highlighting it more. They're giving and because this was the developer conference, they're giving developers access to these commands. So it's not just the Apple apps that can do stuff. Developers can add it to third party apps.
Right. They did mention that, and it was pretty cool.
Again, because we've said this before. Both in the phones and, the computers and all that, there's only so much you can do with it to, entice it, to make folks want to do this or that. And it's more or less, they've hit a wall. They're just getting creative here by combining now applications and making it simpler instead of, like Steve was saying, this was one operation, this is another, now they're combining it.
And they're trying to
simplify it.
Yeah. They're trying to sort of make a guess about what the next big thing will be, because the computer market is been matured over the last 40 years. What else can they do? We can make them a little faster, but we're reaching bottlenecks there. The speed of light is now a bottleneck when you're designing a circuit.
That's exactly right.
So they're coming up with new neural engines. We used to AI. We used to call it machine learning, and they're changing the names. And now they're VR and AR. Everyone's trying to come out with the next augmented reality or virtual reality. So what they're all trying to come up with whatever the next big thing is going to be.
Right. And one of the issues that Apple has always had. And I think for the longest time it put them behind Apple, behind Google and Amazon, is that they're a closed system.
Mm-hmm.
Apple, if you're going to do something, you're doing it in-house and you're done. They may buy a company, but they do everything in-house.
Yep.
Google went out into the community when they wanted to develop the neural network behind Google Assistant. Amazon did the same thing when they wanted to do the neural network behind Alaska, and Apple did not. And I think that's one of the reasons that they're behind everybody else. When you only ever do things in-house, if you haven't got the talent,
it shuts themselves off from a lot of the other the world,
right,
that other minds that could possibly develop other stuff.
Right.
When you say, oh, no, it can only be within the Apple part versus, the PC side and the Android side, where it's wide open.
Yeah.
Well, and they welcome stuff from other folks. You know, I mean.
And this saddens me in particular because now I lose bragging rights.
Yeah.
I've always been able to brag that Susan Bennett follows me on Twitter. Susan Bennett was the voice of Siri.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just a neural network like all the others. And I believe they still sampled her voice. But
yeah.
Because she is the voice of Siri.
And the usual point that a lot of the pundits make is that because Apple was more focused on privacy, they didn't use other people's stuff. They didn't use public networks. And so that has limited what Siri can do.
Right.
But then they don't have the huge privacy leak of personal information that Google and Facebook are, especially Facebook, are known for.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I agree with that, and I do understand it.
Yeah.
But that's the reason that they're behind. It's not that they're not smart people, and it's not that they're not capable of doing this.
Right.
Because they're keeping it inside the walled garden, it takes them longer to get stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
They either have to hire somebody away and then make them start a brand new project, or buy a company that comes up for sale.
Yep.
So, and I get that. I loved the they hit the preteen market really hard this time. You can now get emojis, an entire set of emojis that look like you, which I believe they're calling Memojis.
Memojis, yeah.
Yeah. And so you can now get essentially your cartoon face, thumbs up, thumbs down, crying, laughing, all the emoji things.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if I were 11, that would thrill me to no end. But I'm an adult, and I don't care. And they spent, I thought, an inordinate amount of time on Minecraft. I'm not entirely sure why.
Trying to make, you know, augmented reality the next big thing.
Yeah, but instead of doing so, well, again, yeah. You know, they, if you're going to do it all in-house, it takes time. Mm-hmm. So they went to Microsoft and did Minecraft.
That's kind of the bigger thing in my mind is they used a Microsoft product. They didn't use, you know, IKEA has a VR thing where you can show the assembled thing in your environment. Right. Or, you know, there's a bunch of companies that have been starting to do that, but they actually used a Microsoft product.
Yeah, that was a little weird, I thought.
Yeah. That's a little outside the box.
15 minutes to Microsoft. Easy 15 minutes of the presentation to Microsoft. And that's, you know, that's an eighth of their time.
Yeah.
Which is a lot for to give to another company. But they, you know, they push the ecosystem. And if you live in the Apple ecosystem, there's some pretty amazing things you can do. Many people do not fully live in that, though, so that's still an issue for a lot of people. But I was very impressed by the cheese grater. Excuse me, the new Mac Pro.
It's like the cheese grater and the cube had a baby.
Yeah, yes.
Because you turn the handle and lift the whole. You lift the case off with the cube. You lifted the guts out of the case,
right?
Which was interesting.
Right, and it's very easy to add and remove and change stuff as a. If I were still doing tech support, I would love that.
Yeah,
I don't know that I could convince my boss to buy it an $11,000.
Yeah,
excuse me, 12, maybe 13, because you got to buy the wheels.
If you max everything out, people are estimating it's going to be close to $50,000.
Yep.
But they've compared, Digital Trends did an interesting article. They compared that to the Lenovo ThinkStation 920, which would push $40,000 and still not have the graphics capability of the Mac. Or there's a Dell Precision that would be $90,000 and would have more RAM. It would have 3 terabytes of RAM. The Mac can only go to 1.5 terabytes of RAM.
Right.
Mm. And so it's one thing that we often have said in the Mac world all along that a similarly equipped PC would cost about the same amount.
Or a little more.
Yeah. But most people are looking for budgets.
Right.
But in Hollywood, we'll probably sell half a dozen of these monster machines to the local video production houses and ad agencies.
And they're well worth whatever they pay for them because of the stuff they can do.
Yeah.
But it's not a mainstream product.
No.
It's a niche product.
That has been the concern for years is that it's felt like they've abandoned that pro market. The current, you know, Mac Pro.
When they say pro, they're not kidding this time.
Yeah.
Oh, serious pro.
The Mac, the current Mac Pro cylinder, not even a tower anymore, the cylinder came out in 2013 and hasn't changed since then. And a lot of professional, especially in the video and audio production arena, had to switch to Windows because you can still run Adobe Premiere. So you had to give up Final Cut. For the long time, Final Cut had like a 90% market share in Hollywood type movies. And you can run Premiere, you can run Avid, you can customize your PCs a lot more. So if you want to have tons of storage in the computer, the Mac cylinder had 6 Thunderbolt ports on it, so you could hook 48 hard drives to it if you wanted to, and have you know what's beyond a terabyte?
Yottabytes, and then zettabytes.
Petabytes, yottabytes, and zettabytes. But it was all external, and that's one of the early criticisms of the current Mac Pro. is it can only be configured with 4 terabytes of solid state storage.
What the heck?
But there's that MPX card slot. Someone has already announced a 35-terabyte drive bay for it.
Nice.
They didn't announce the prices.
See, as a systems administrator, my first thought is going to be, where am I going to back that up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On the other 35-terabyte drive array.
Well, that's exactly.
Remember tape drives were big, but they maxed out at like 100 gigs?
Mm-hmm.
So you need a 10 tape mechanism to just be 1 terabyte?
Yep.
I got 1,000 tapes to back up my computer.
Well, that's why you had carousels with little robots that went and got the tapes and changed them.
Switched them out.
Yep. All right, we should probably go to the phones. Doug probably has fallen asleep. Doug from Irondequoit, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
Peachy. What's up?
I think your cough is from microphone poisoning or something.
Yeah, it might be.
could be. Anyway, an interesting computer mystery here. A few weeks ago, my spectrum data speed was varying from 100 down to 30, back and forth, mostly when it was raining. So they sent somebody out who found some wear and tear on the pole, ran a whole new line into the house, put new connectors on my internal cable. And before this, when everything worked right, my Pixel phone and my laptop, when things were working, would both read on Wi-Fi around 100 megabits, mm-hmm. which is what was expected. So he fixed it up, and of course, while he was here, the laptop was connected with a cable to the router. Cause, Anyway, that's all done. The speeds are consistent. However, here's the mystery. Sitting in the same room as the router with the phone, if I run speedtest.net, I get around 100. And if I connect the computer by cable to the router, I get around 100. But the computer, anywhere else in the house or even in the same room, is only getting 40 to 50. It only connects, it's a Dell laptop, it only connects to 2G, it doesn't see 5G, but before all this began, that never was an issue. So, what could happen to a computer to suddenly make it not see the same Wi-Fi speeds that it did before, if nothing else has changed, but...
What operating system are you running?
It's Windows 7 Pro, fully updated. Mm-hmm. The only other thing that this guy did was put some kind of a forward pass filter on the modem, but other than that...
That shouldn't have any... you're saying that even when it's plugged into a wire, it's getting a slower connection?
No, I'm sorry. On a wire, it's fine. It's right up at right 100.
I would check the antenna connections. Make sure the antennas are connected tight to the card. One of the things that's happened is, if you remember the olden days, we used to have giant antennas sticking out of our phones and our computers and our routers. And that's good because then you get a good strong signal out of it. But people didn't like the looks of those antennas. So now all the antennas are internal to the device. Mm-hmm. And you don't get quite as good a reception on them. What can happen... Even then, is the antenna can come disconnected from the card, and so that's almost no antenna connection then. So you're trying to basically tune a radio with no antenna. So the farther away you get, the worse it is.
Right. The other thing, two other things you might want to think about: the antenna, depending on the model of computer, runs up into the lid. And it may be running up one side versus the other. So if you are only exposing, say, the right side of your laptop to the wireless router, the screen itself may be blocking much of the signal. So if you turned the laptop 40 or 50 degrees, you may get a much stronger signal. The other thing is, as Steve said, it may be the antenna. One of the problems that's been since the first days of laptops is because that antenna runs up through the hinge, it can get broken.
It frays over mm-hmm. time of opening and closing
a
lot.
Right. Yeah.
And it may well be that it's just not healthy. And that and the thing that makes us think that is the fact that you get full speed when you're wired.
Yes. Okay.
Right. And it's the wireless. Now you might want to think about going to the manufacturer's website and seeing if there are updated drivers for your modem, your wireless modem, your wireless card. That's certainly not an impossibility that something like that has happened. The other thing is this a different router or is it the same one from before?
It's the same router. Nothing has changed.
Okay.
But the only other thing that low signal is connected with is 2G. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the 2 gigahertz band is the more common band, but it is also the more crowded band. Your microwave is 2.4 gigahertz. So if you turn your microwave on, you're going to lose signal speed.
2.4 and 5 gigahertz are both essentially free spectra. Right. But 2.4 was first, and so there's an amazing array of devices that run at 2.4 gigahertz.
And the 5 gigahertz band doesn't go through walls as well.
Right.
But it is less crowded. But it needs a different antenna than 2 gigahertz. So that could also point to your antennas being damaged in some way.
Right. Yeah. And now you're an older system, too.
Right. It's you're a saying Windows your laptop. Machine. Yeah, yeah. Your laptop doesn't do 5G, right?
Right, it doesn't. I just checked that, and there's a lot of gibberish online about how to check it and try fixing it, but I'm not going to mess with it. It was good enough at 2G for the laptop.
Well, yeah. No, the real question I'm asking is not does Windows 7 do 5G, because it doesn't, generally, but does the laptop itself do 5G? Because if it does, there may be an updated driver at the website that would work, although... again, since Windows 7 has been utterly abandoned by everyone, it is unlikely. But it certainly wouldn't hurt to check on the website and see if there's an updated driver. Make sure it's for Windows 7, not Windows 10. And make sure it's specifically for your individual model of laptop. But if you can find that, try it.
Okay. And I'm also headed for Ubuntu in about a month, so that's my next...
Well, and that's all the more reason to find out if, in fact, the laptop itself will do 5G.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And one of the fixes, if it is a hardware issue in the laptop, can be a USB Wi-Fi dongle that just plugs into one of your USB ports. It would have, you can get the N or even the faster AC. You can get them with external antennas. And so if your house has a Faraday cage, you're on the library. Where you need a better antenna in the computer, that's an option as well.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that existed. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Good luck, Doug.
I appreciate the input. Thank you very much.
Sure. Yep. Thanks. The problem with Wi-Fi, of course, in general, is that it's invisible. And
can you imagine if we could see radio waves?
Well, we're talking about that. You wouldn't be able to see anything. There are so many radio waves except in my library. There's so many radio waves everywhere that you would literally be blind because you couldn't see a thing. And most of those are 2.4 gigahertz band radio waves. And consequently, you've got an issue. I've got an issue in my house. I live in the shadow of Pinnacle Hill. And so I get every television station and every radio station perfectly on every channel simultaneously.
Yep.
And that also interferes with my Wi-Fi. Less so because the 2.4 gigahertz band is not the same one that's used. But one of the things that you can do is essentially a wireless map of your house. You can wander around the house looking at the levels and making a little map for yourself to see where it drops off and then figure out why. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites. Member supported. Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Bart did, taking time off from this beautiful day in Rochester, New York. Hiya, Bart. What's up?
Good. I've got a Lenovo Idea Center desktop, 5.5 years old, and lately, sometimes it types, sometimes it doesn't. Do I need to get a new keyboard?
I don't know the Lenovo Idea Center, which model?
530.
Yeah.
Is it the same keys not working every time, or is it different keys don't work?
It's usually the same keys.
Take a can of compressed gas to it and blow any crud out that got under the keys, maybe.
Yeah. The Lenovo, that particular machine, that's the one with the touchscreen, right?
That's right.
Yeah. It does have a separate keyboard, and honestly... that's the cheapest troubleshooting thing to do.
Probably a new keyboard is cheaper than a can of compressed air.
Well, probably these days, yeah. But if it's just the keyboard not responding properly, perhaps a can of compressed air will fix it. If that doesn't do it, then replacing the keyboard may be the thing that does it.
It's a wireless.
Right. Well, now, when was the last time you changed the batteries? They could be dying.
This morning.
Okay, then.
Still doing it. No, I've changed the batteries twice.
Yeah.
Does it have a dongle that plugs into a USB port, or is it built into the computer?
It's built in.
Okay. Because sometimes changing the USB port can help.
Right.
Right. Can you attach a wired keyboard to it?
I don't know.
Through the USB port.
Sure.
Yeah, there's probably a USB port on the back.
No, you probably can. If it's you're USB still running port. 8. Windows 8, or is it Windows 10?
10.
Yeah, okay. You should be able to plug in any keyboard, any USB keyboard to the USB port. And you know, if you have one, or you have a friend who would loan you one, that's the cheapest way.
Yeah.
To know what the issue is.
That's a good idea.
That's generally the thing that I would suggest first, particularly if you already have one sitting around.
But I don't have one, but I can get one, and I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's
it looks like a mechanical problem. Wouldn't you say so?
Well, if it's only certain keys, yes, I would. Yes, I would. And Steve is right. If you've got some compressed air, blow it out and see what happens. You know, the reality is if you're a smoker, or you eat around the keyboard, or you've got animals, or, you know, whatever.
No, I have none of those.
Yeah, but even so, you can definitely find crud building up in the computer and in the keyboard, and blowing it out once in a while is not a bad idea. I took two of mine over to gave two of mine to Dave once.
Yep, blew
he's
him
got
up.
He's got a giant compressor that I believe he blows up bounces.
How close do you hold it to the keyboard?
Well, if you're using compressed air, you want to be careful. There are models that are designed to be used with electronics, and they have less moisture.
Yeah, and what often happens is the first couple of spurts will have more condensation in it.
Yeah, so that's why my compressor has an inline filter. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Right. So the first, you know, spritz in the air a couple of times to get most of the moisture out, and then go right in there and clean it out, and then let it dry. Give it a couple hours to dry.
Turn it off, take the batteries out just in case.
Yeah. Turn it off and take the batteries out before you do that.
I have a related question, all right?
Yeah.
Suppose I decide to get a new keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Does it have to be a Lenovo?
No. As long as it meets the same specifications, and you want to look in your specs, but I suspect it's a Bluetooth keyboard, which means that any keyboard that does Bluetooth would connect. And any, you know, I have my desktop is a Dell, and I've got a Microsoft keyboard connected to it. They don't care.
But generally, Bluetooth keyboards cost more than USB keyboards, so that's something to keep in mind, too.
That's good. That's good.
Right, and if you're just sitting in front of it.
I listen to you guys a lot. I'm 76 years old.
God bless you.
I've been working on computers since 1991.
There you go.
And I like them. They usually work. I like your show very much. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you very much. The big thing to remember is if you're buying a new keyboard, as Steve said, the wired keyboards are much less expensive. And if as long as you're just sitting in front of it anyway, there's no reason not to have a wired keyboard.
And one of the tricky things in the industry is there are wireless keyboards that aren't Bluetooth. So they're sort of an intermediate price range, and they require a USB dongle on the back. So some people like the wirelessness of it, but then you have to remember it uses that USB port.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Yep. All right. Have fun.
All right.
Thanks, Bart. Yeah, there's really a lot more to it than what you might think. All right, I'm going to read a new... man, I tell you what, I got calls about this week.
Yeah.
Gmail, YouTube, and other services that rely on Google's technology were disrupted for several hours on Sunday by what the company said were, and I quote, high levels of network congestion, unquote. It first began, Google first began investigating it around 4 p.m. Eastern Time. The issues appeared to affect more than a dozen Google services, including its cloud computing technology, which is actually used by many companies to power their services and apps. Google immediately said the problems were not caused by a cyber attack, as hypothesized by some on social media. As of 7 p.m.-ish, Google said that the issue was resolved for all users. The company said in a statement that it would conduct an internal investigation of this issue and make an appropriate make appropriate improvements to our systems to help prevent or minimize future reoccurrence. Contained largely to the eastern United States and to a few hours on a Sunday evening, the disruptions appeared to cause less of a headache than they would have if they had hit on a busier workday or more broadly. But the widespread nature of the slowdowns and errors underscore just how ubiquitous Google services are and how, given the rise in cloud computing, such problems can have an outsized impact. Users reported problems with Snapchat and Discord, a voice and text chat app for gamers. Spotify, an e-commerce platform that powers thousands of stores, also reported being affected. Shopify, not Spotify. The root cause of last Sunday's outage was a configuration change for a small group of servers in one region being wrongly applied to a larger number of servers across several neighboring regions. That error then caused those regions to stop using more than half of their available network capacity. It also slowed down access by the people trying to fix it, which simply exacerbated the problem. The impact was severe for high bandwidth platforms like YouTube, but less so for low bandwidth services like Google Search, which saw only a brief increase in latency. Approximately 1% of active Gmail users had problems with their account. That was me. While that is a small fraction of users, it still represents millions of users who couldn't receive or send email. Were you affected? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And that was the funny part about this from my end, because I didn't have anything, I didn't have to do anything with it. The way Google fixes these things and sets these things up is remotely. But when the problem is, you're so congested, you can't access it remotely, you can't fix your screw-up.
And at noon on a Sunday, there's no one at the Google office.
Oh, there's a lot of people at the Google office. That's true. But they couldn't get past their own problem to fix their own problem. Yep. I'm sure there's a whole bunch of people right now talking about how they got to do something about that.
There's an interesting article in Wired, the Catch-22 that broke the internet, because so many services use Google Cloud backend. When Google has a problem, it affects huge swaths of the internet. Same thing with Amazon. You don't realize how many companies use Amazon web hosting.
Yeah, AWS, Web Services.
And it's amazing when there's a problem on one Amazon host, and then suddenly half the West Coast goes down.
Amazon Web Services are very, very, very inexpensive, depending on what you're doing. But yeah, when they go down hard, and they take a lot of people with them. And this is something I learned 25 years ago, and has always been true. If a person's computer breaks, they're unhappy. If they can't get at their file systems, they're very unhappy. Mm-hmm. But you screw around with their mail, and they're angry.
Yep.
Or Facebook.
or Facebook. Well, and of course, part of the issue nowadays is younger folks are all Snapchat, WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, and texting, and they don't do a lot of email. But if you're a business or you're dealing with large files or, in any environment that isn't, Netflix and chill, you're using email.
Mm-hmm.
Adults use email. And it just screwed up. And like I said, it was about 1% of Google's users. That's still millions of people. millions of them.
Yeah, it's a, like nothing.
And I had an interesting issue, which is I use Thunderbird to get my mail. And one of my addresses, which is a Gmail, which is a Gmail address, didn't come back. It the token had changed somehow. And it took me, first I had, because I didn't realize that was the issue, I thought it was just still not connecting yet, right? At the end, it ended up timing me out of Google, and so Google locked my account. Getting it back was an issue, but I eventually did.
Was Yahoo your recovery address?
No, thank you. No. I had multiple recovery methods, so I used my phone as my recovery method, and that worked fine. But once I had it back again, now I had to go into Thunderbird and find the place where Thunderbird stores my Google OAuth to token.
Yeah.
And delete it so it would ask me for my password again and give me a new one.
Yeah, so that I could get back in. So far down in, it's unbelievable.
Well, you can find it. It's in there, but yeah, it was
many layers deep.
Yeah, it took me a little bit of it took me quite a bit of searching in the Google system to find it. But I also spent a lot of time just looking through the various menu choices, and it's under, and I don't remember exactly where it is now. If somebody needs it, I can get it. But it's buried under something that doesn't say anything about token. Oh, it's in passwords. It's in your password section. So you go into tools and security and the passwords tab, and it not only lists all your passwords, but also all your tokens. So I could select that token and delete it and then go get my mail. And it would say, well, this is brand new. You have to
reinitialize
it. And the little Google thing comes up that says, do you want to do this? And are you you? And yada, yada, yada. And then I was fine. But geez and crackers. It was painful. Process.
Good thing you're retired and don't have anything else to do.
Exactly. No, I've told you I'm a print monkey.
Yep.
For my wife. I have a 3D printer, and I'm printing stuff for her left and right. Now,
you need to get another one. Did the first one you ordered ever come?
No, not yet. we're getting weekly updates from the company, so I know that somebody's still alive over there. So, but I bought an Ender 3, and it's amazingly good. I see all these people.
Does it play a game?
No, it's not that Ender.
It was all a game in the first place. Yeah.
It listed $179, and I paid much less than that because I waited for a deal. But it prints really quite amazingly well. Quite amazingly well. And then I get online and read these people and say, my Ender 3 doesn't print at all. And you look farther down and they say, well, I changed the hot end, and I changed the bed, and I changed the drive, and I changed everything, and now it doesn't print. Well,
Set it back to factory reset.
Right. Well, put all those original parts back on. It prints great.
Put it back on right. That's sort of where I'm stuck at it.
Right. I actually bought a new gear drive to push the filament, and I'm afraid to put it on.
Why?
Because the old one is working fine.
Mm-hmm. That moment of panic when you get everything back together, hit the button, and nothing happens.
But is it a hard change?
No, it's actually a very easy change. But the fiddly bit is getting the gears set correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as my gears are fine right now, mm-hmm. I don't really need to change it.
Okay. They're meshing okay.
Meshing okay. They're doing fine. When I first got it, they didn't mesh, and I fixed that. And I really don't want to have to go through it again until I have to. You know, I'm perfectly content. One little plastic piece broke off that is completely irrelevant, so I don't care.
Okay.
but I love, you know, speaking of fiddling with it and it suddenly doesn't work. Back in the day, I had a Mac, the original Mac in the little case, and it was, and I upgraded it to a Fat Mac, And then Kevin Kondo said, oh, I can put 2 megabytes of RAM.
Yeah.
What?
Megs.
2 megabytes of RAM in that thing instead of 512 meg. I said, let's do that. That's great. So I took it to his house one day, and we opened it up, and we took out the RAM that was in there.
Unsoldered it.
Unsoldered it. Did all of that. Got it. Okay. Put it all back together. Turned it on. And nothing happened.
At least you didn't put the smoke
out. And nothing happened. And we looked at each other, and eyes got real wide, and then all of a sudden, bung.
Yep.
And what it was doing is it internally counts up the memory.
RAM test.
It does a RAM test.
Yeah.
And when it was a 512 meg amount of RAM, it took very little time. 2 megs took
forever.
8 times as much.
When I went from 1 meg to 4 megs, the same thing happened. Yeah. Remember, PCs used to count the RAM when you turned it on.
Right.
Well, you got so much RAM that counting took forever, so they stopped counting it. It still does, but they stopped showing the count.
Yeah.
right. And that's the thing about Apple. Apple hides everything.
Yeah.
So they hid the fact that they were counting the RAM, which meant it looked like the machine was doing exactly nothing.
Before the chime. A lot of people think the chime is when it's powered on. No, the chime is it passed the RAM test.
Right.
And we're really, really mad that took the chime out. So now you push the button and nothing happens. And we're sitting there. Did it work? If you're lucky, you can see the backlight come on. But it might be 20, 30 seconds before the Apple logo pops up.
And the countdown was kind of unique to have, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, swatching
it was nice.
You knew everything was working.
You knew something was happening.
Yeah.
And that's the important part. Apple doesn't have, on my desktop. Even on my laptop, there's a little light that goes on when the when something's happening, when the hard drive
blinky lights, yeah.
Running, you don't get those here. You don't get anything here. And I suppose
that somebody made one that will blink in your menu bar.
See, that's nice because I want to know that it's not dead.
Something
I
want to
know
doing.
That something's happening.
It's processing something,
right? And that's one of the things I just don't like about Apple products. You just don't get any of that, and I don't like it. And Chromebooks don't do it either. But on the other hand, Chromebooks are so much faster that it doesn't really need to. Right. You know your Chromebook, if it 8 seconds later, if it hasn't booted up, there's a problem.
Yeah.
You just don't shut down.
Well, and that's what I eventually did with the Mac that I had two whopping megabytes of, and I ran Apple Cider off of that thing for years and years and years. I had a HyperCard. I loved HyperCard.
Yep.
I will never forgive Apple. I will never forgive Apple for getting rid of HyperCard. I had written a HyperCard stack that because I had an extra big hard drive as well. I had all of the an index of all of the disks that we had. And so I could pick a disk, and it would ask for the disk, and it would load it into RAM, because now I had 2 megs of RAM. And then I could put in and it would tell me, it would eject it, and I put in the blank, and it would fill it up, and I could take it out. So I got the library copying system down to where I could do it in an afternoon instead of over 3 days.
Yeah.
Of course, you young whippersnappers just steal everything off the internet now anyway.
Did you have the little disk duplicator then, or did I inherit that from you or somebody else?
No, somebody else.
So there was this thing you could hang on the front of your Mac.
Yep.
Now, the Mac floppy disks drives were different than Windows, where if you push the disk in a little bit, it would grab it and suck it in the rest of the way.
Yep.
And when you ejected a disk, it would actually spit it out a little bit.
Yep.
So there was this mechanism that you could get that would grab the disk and spit it out and then drop it into a sled. And then you put a stack of empty disks on top, and it would push the next one in.
Yep.
And
very
so
cool.
We could mass duplicate floppy disks. It was so amazing.
Yeah, it was very cool.
We were easily amazed back then.
Easily. The fact that they booted up every day amazed me.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that right now.
Yep.
But here's the thing that makes me angry. All these computers, no more programming languages.
Well, they're all hidden down in there. There's Perl and Python and Ruby and JavaScript.
They don't make a thing out of it now.
Yeah.
So kids today don't know how to program. It used to be, when I worked at the computer center, one day this little 8-year-old girl came in and said, could I borrow one of your Apple computers to do my homework? I said, sure. What's she going to be doing? I don't know, but fine. She sat down. She was writing basic code. She wrote a great little program. And I thought, I hate this girl. She's going to have my job someday. But now, no, people don't know how to program.
This year, at the WWDC, there was a 10-year-old boy. WWDC.
Just Dub-Dub.
Yeah, Dub-Dub. I never went, so it's WWDC.
Yeah, right.
10-year-old boy was the youngest person ever to show off an app. And we are seeing more and more younger and younger kids getting into programming. And some of the tools available now, especially the Swift object programming language,
right,
is an amazing tool for younger kids to use. I tried to get, 'cause I used to program, darn it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
we all did.
Yeah. And I tried to get back into it in my spare time. And it's interesting. The whole concept, when I was programming, OOPS was the brand new concept, object-oriented programming system,
yeah. OOPS. OOPS systems, yeah.
Yeah. And and now that's taken for granted. Everything you do is an object, right?
Everything is an object.
Yep. So, yeah.
In my case, everything objects when I write code. That's a different story.
Actually, that was the beginning little movie. Apple always plays little movies at the beginning of their meetings. And it was code compile fails.
Yeah.
And everyone banging their heads and throwing their computer and, you know, stomping around. And, you know, by the end of this 2-minute movie, compile complete.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I don't care if it compiles right. I just want it to run right.
Yeah, right.
I could almost always get it to compile right.
Yeah, right.
Although, was it COBOL? It's so
indent sensitive.
Symbol sensitive, yeah. I missed a comma and got a 1,500-page error report.
Yes.
From the compiler.
Yes. You'd go to the high priest
to get your printout.
They send a printout like this tall on your desk, and you think.
And they stopped it at 1,500 pages.
Yes.
So you knew you were in
You didn't even know what the end was, because you didn't know how long it went.
You must have got caught in an infinite loop. I wondered why it was 1,500 pages they stopped at. Why not 50 or 20?
Right, right.
What's the output of an average program? 10 pages?
The good news is I always had a lot of coloring paper for my daughter.
Yeah, yep.
And she could crayon for weeks on just one error.
Yeah.
But that's
the bygone era.
The bygone era. That's exactly right. All right. That music tells me that we're done for this hour. But you know what? Don't go away, because we're going to do it all over again. We're going to take a slightly longer break. So take a little bio break and then come on back, because we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow, that must mean it's Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we can continue to be, with your support, member-supported. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Or, of course, you can text us at 585-209-9010. And we got a text, yeah?
Yeah, I think he's a little confused, and the reason I say that is because he says, I have a Lenovo desktop computer, and I am using Windows 2016. That's not likely. Every time I write a new email, the format text is activated with an editing symbol. How do I turn off the format text off, and keep it off?
I wonder if he means Office 2016, and then why would he be editing emails in Microsoft Word?
Well, yeah, I think we need a little more information. What is your email
program?
Without knowing what that is, we can't lead you to an answer. So please text us back and let us know.
Or give us a call. Talk to us live.
Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And while you're doing one of those two things...
Nick will take a drink.
Nick will take a drink, and then we will read the next news item, because this is a big one. On Tuesday, the NSA called on IT administrators to apply security updates issued by Microsoft 3 weeks ago. Adding to a chorus of voices urging haste. The agency's advice echoed that of Microsoft itself. On the previous Thursday, a Microsoft official reminded users of the updates, which the company released on May 14th, and implied that time is short. Microsoft's plea, at least, was unusual. Once the developer has released a fix, it has rarely circled back to remind customers to install a patch, instead assuming that they have done what they were supposed to do. The NSA and Microsoft warnings were about flaws in Windows remote desktop services that could be exploited by attackers in ways that made the bug especially dangerous. The vulnerabilities have been named the Blue Keep. The big problem is that the vulnerability is wormable, which means that it could be turned into a worm that could potentially infect half the Windows computers in the world. The vulnerabilities are so serious that Microsoft made the unprecedented decision to deliver patches not only to the still-supported versions of Windows, that is to say, 10, but included Windows 7 and the outdated Windows XP, which was retired more than 5 years ago. Microsoft intimated that it knows more than it's saying. Microsoft is confident that the exploit exists for this vulnerability, said a blog post, that the exploit exists for this vulnerability. Then on Twitter this week, after the NSA issued its bulletin, the Microsoft security boss tweeted, I cannot urge you enough to patch your systems as soon as possible. The NSA was almost as sure the doom was on the horizon. It is likely only a matter of time before remote exploitation code is widely available for this vulnerability. NSA is concerned that malicious cyber actors will use the vulnerability in ransomware and exploit kits containing other known exploits, increasing capabilities against other unpatched systems. It's unclear what exactly drove Microsoft and the NSA to issue their patch now alerts, but maybe it's a good idea to pay attention. We have connections to the lists, to the patches that you can download and install if you've been ignoring all your stuff. And our question, of course, is, are you still running unsecured versions of Windows? Stop! And give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
But you just know someone's going to say this is proof that Windows XP is still being updated.
Yes, yes. And it's not. It's when I said that it was an unprecedented step, I meant that.
Yep.
So you need to be aware that XP is not being updated. Windows 7 only gets some updates. And if you're still using them, what's going to happen is we're going to get people who say, my system was hacked and now I don't know what to do. Well, invent a time machine, go back and patch it like you're supposed to. Like we told you now, and you'll be at least a little better prepared for that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry, what's up?
Good afternoon, guys. When you hollered stop, I almost dropped my phone. I'm back with another Linux problem. I have a Epson XP420 attached to the machine, or it's actually running through Wi-Fi. And when I'm running Linux and try to print, the printer will say it's printing. It sees it evidently. Something's going across, but nothing happens. I've tried this until I don't know what else to do.
Does the printer front panel ever look like it's receiving the data before it tries to print?
Yes, it does. And then it will say like it normally does when I'm running it in the Mac OS. It will say printing. But then nothing happens.
All right. I'm sorry. Which version of Linux are you running?
I have Ubuntu 18.04 point something. 0.2, I believe it is.
Yeah, all right. So what you want to do is go to Epson's own website, and Steve can post a link to that.
Mm-hmm.
Select your particular printer, and then obviously the proper driver for your version of Ubuntu.
Right.
Download the .deb file, double-click on it to install it. The drivers that come with the Epson XP line is named that because it was designed specifically to work with Windows XP.
Oh.
And therefore, much of the smarts of the printer are not in the printer, they were in XP. And so consequently, you have to run a particular special driver, which obviously came with your Mac and does not come with Linux.
Right.
In order to mimic the smarts that aren't built into the printer anymore. And this particular driver set will do that for you. So Steve's going to put up a link. It's at download. Oh, well, he's going to do that.
Okay, I actually did that. I may have not gotten the right driver.
Yeah, you have to get the driver specifically for your printer and specifically for your version of Ubuntu.
Okay. I thought I was doing that, but I didn't see. Oh, okay. I think you said the key word, my version of Ubuntu, so that's what I need to look for. But if Steve's going to put up a link for me, that will help me worm my way in there a little bit more specifically and find that, because I see the printer face come up and say printing, but then nothing happens.
Right, because there's no smarts there.
Okay.
Right, the smarts were built into XP and don't exist in the printer. So it gets this data stream and thinks, I don't know what to do with this.
It made the printers cheaper by not putting a processor in them, because your computer is doing all the processing.
Right.
Well, maybe I should. I'm too cheap to buy another printer right now. This one's working great. I got no issues.
No, and that's fine. And that's one of the reasons it was an inexpensive printer. And as right. long as you have installed the correct driver, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Something has to do the processing. And in this case, it's your computer. And it's doable. You just have to have the exact right driver.
Got it. All right. Well, I'm going to jump right on that while I listen to the show. And as usual, thank you guys for being there.
Thank you. All right. Uh-huh. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Larry. Yeah.
The funny thing is they still sell the XP series. So I'm guessing that they've added more smarts for 7 and 10.
It's certainly a possibility, yeah. Or the driver still has the smarts in it.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I beg your pardon.
What's a little annoying, here it is. So if I go to the general support page for that printer, it does offer Linux.
Yeah.
So all the different Macs, all the different Windowses, and way down at the bottom is Linux.
Yeah.
Oh, it's reverse alphabetical. W then M then L.
I don't doubt that. But that's the deal right there. We have a printer that has no smarts. Not a bad printer. I'm not saying it's a bad printer, but it has no smarts. And so if you want the smarts, it's got to come from the computer, which means you have to have a specific driver to do that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Gates, New York. Hiya, Brian. What's up?
Not much, guys. How are you guys doing all today?
Oh, just peachy as all heck.
I can tell. I missed the very first part of the show, unfortunately.
What?
Hey, you know, I got to do something with the pool. I've been a member of, or used one of the financial institutions, which is a national financial institution
sure.
with outlets here in town for years and years and years, and used their online banking site.
Right.
Yesterday, using my same ID that I've used for a long time, nothing. Can't get in. It does not respond. There's, no, don't recognize your ID. Call this number. So I call the number, spend an awful lot of time waiting on hold.
Oh, yeah.
Finally, the guy says, oh, yeah, you're an old, I can see from your account number, you're an old user, da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, that's your, not, that's your name, all right. Look on the sign-in screen. Do you have an extra space after your name?
Uh-huh.
So which is, said, well, to a computer,
I
is a different
before,
name.
But I do now.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, we did a massive national upgrade, and they put a space after everybody's name.
Oh, man.
Yep, and to a computer, that's a different name.
Yeah. Yep.
That's exactly right. Oh, yeah, I took the space up. Works like a charm.
Unbelievable. Yeah, well, that's, and of course, they didn't tell you that.
No.
It might be in your statement this month.
Yeah, maybe. Right. Right. If you look at the bottom of the statement, maybe.
Yeah.
But of course, if you're getting it, screw up an entire national system.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, if you're getting your statement electronically,
yep.
you aren't going to get the statement to see the thing. No,
oh,
then, you're right.
Make sure I didn't bust a check.
Yeah, right. But you're right, Brian. This is the tiny little things like this that if you're not paying attention, somebody fumble fingered something somewhere. Added a space at the end of a name or didn't take away a space from the end of the name. And mm-hmm. this is what you end up with. It's ridiculous.
Well, it sounds like it happened to everybody's name.
Yeah. Clearly, because the guy...
Like the entire system.
Yeah. Because clearly the guy was like, oh, yeah, here you go.
No, just take out the space. Well...
amazing.
Should we have him mention the bank so that other people with this problem would know the answer?
Well, if you can't log on to your bank, try adding, or is it take away? Which is it?
Take away
a space from the end of your name. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Well, you've worked with computers long enough, you know it is believable.
Yes, that's true. It's very true. It is entirely believable.
All right, guys.
All right, thanks, Brian.
Bye.
I just heard on Security Now, they were talking about the Google Titan. Is it Titan? Their security dongle? Yeah, the Google Titan security key. Apparently, in the Bluetooth low energy specification, and Matthew Green from Johns Hopkins University, a very well-respected security researcher, apparently got a little outraged on his blog. In the Bluetooth low energy security specification, when the Bluetooth key pair exchange is happening, they allow a one-byte password.
Yes. Yes, they do.
So your password is 256 characters. So that means that when you're pairing your Bluetooth, any bad guy nearby only has to try 256 combinations, and he can get into your device instead of who you think you're pairing it with.
Yep.
And so Google added this in their security key that's supposed to be this super ultra-secure thing. And so he went on and about it. Google has since responded and saying, oops, and is going to give everyone a new security key.
Yeah, they're actually sending out tens of thousands of these new security keys for free.
And so,
which is the right way to handle it.
Yeah. So what they were saying on the show is when they were designing the spec, what idiot decided that one byte was enough? So
right.
There's got to be a minimum. Okay.
Right.
But one byte is the minimum. So that's probably how the spec was. The key pairing should be more than 0 bytes.
Right.
Okay, one.
Right.
That's more than zero.
Well, somebody was talking this week about a system that they use which checks to make sure that your password is not one byte.
Yeah.
But that's the only check it
makes.
Right,
but
so
two
you
is okay.
Two, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Thou should not proceed unto three unless thou immediately proceed to four. Five is right out.
Right. Are you done with this?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Now we're done. Don't touch me.
But yeah, so it's interesting how the security people yell at companies who develop things in secret. The whole WPA3, which is the new wireless protected WPA. What's the A? Assurance? Whatever.
Assurance, yeah.
Whatever, yeah, whatever the security system is on the newest Wi-Fi.
WPA 3.
WT2 is what we're using now.
Right.
So then they made WPA 3. Apparently didn't have any cryptographers. So the same... The same security group that was able to weaken WPA2 found some ridiculous errors in the first modems that are coming out with WPA3 now. It says, and that was one of their points, that if you designed this in secret, which is stupid, did you not have any cryptographers or anybody that knew math on your design team?
Yeah, all you need is a person who knows math. It's just, it's not rocket yep. surgery, it's just math. You do rocket surgery,
I do rocket
actually.
Surgery, yeah.
But yeah, it's an issue that people have, and it's part of that business of being secret, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, Apple at least is in fact smart enough to hire people who do know math. But we've got a changing of the guard here. Michael Oden is in for Dave. Hello, Michael. Joy to have you here, as always.
Get some of that antiseptic there.
Yeah, you want to slather that over the microphone. Dave is unwell, and he's going home.
So I'm back for another week.
Yep. Yeah, and we're very excited to have you always. He's a little unwell.
Yeah.
Ladies are unwell. Gentlemen vomit. That's from my favorite movie.
What would you possibly do with a one-byte key? Is anyone at Bluetooth SIG even awake when these idiots decisions get made?
That's exactly
so,
right.
So Matthew Green is usually a kind of sedate guy, but he's a really good cryptographer. He's, you know, pushing the forefront of the science. So this was really half the fun was reading his tweets and how all ridiculous they were getting to be.
Yep.
The maximum size is 1 byte. What kind of an idiot protocol lets users negotiate a maximum key size as 1 byte?
Right. I don't even want to see a minimum key size of 1 byte.
Yeah.
That's just ridiculous. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. What's up, Tom?
Hi, good afternoon. Yeah, I tuned in late, so I don't know if you might have covered this or not. I was checking my news feed over the weekend, and I saw this note. I forgot the publication. It was like CNET or someone like that. They were saying that what looks like what's coming up pretty quickly through quantum computing is that they'll be able to break most encryption codes as they now exist, even, you know, the 32-bit or 64-bit
yep.
codes. And this might happen, like, they didn't give a time frame, but I gathered it would be less than 10 years, which is still close enough to be of concern.
Right.
I was wondering what you thought would be the ways to surmount this.
Well, they're working on that. And CNET or whichever one it was is absolutely right. Quantum computing, one of the things that we say is you want at least a 17-character, actually these days at least an 18-character password, and it needs to be uppercase, lowercase, numbers, symbols, because it takes so long to break them. With quantum computing, they can be broken in less than a second. And so,
well, potentially, I think right now they're at a 3-bit password, not even a 1 byte, a 3-bit password they can break with current quantum computers.
Right, right. But what he's saying is within 10 years.
Yep.
And so the problem is we're going to have to figure out figured out how to beat computers, we'll have to figure out a way to beat quantum computers, and we don't know what that is yet.
Right. Here's the thing, though. You know, so much of our technology, our economy, the financial system depends on being able to keep people from breaking into computer systems and into financial records and things like that. The entire financial system could conceivably broken down if this is not overcome.
Right.
Right. And what is almost at a bigger issue is it's not the math that's breaking; it's the weak passwords that make it easy to break.
Right.
And so there are several researchers working on moving beyond passwords and using using something that is not a traditional password, and being able to, we've talked about biometrics, but then say your biometric data has to get saved somewhere, and if that leaks, how do you change your fingerprint or how do you change your retina?
Right.
So that isn't the answer either, but moving beyond passwords is going to be eventually the answer.
Right, and Microsoft is trying to do that right now. They've got an initiative, and of course you can do some of that with a couple of their touch systems. You put a picture up on the screen, and then how you touch that picture tells them it's you and lets you in, like you show a person's face and you touch the left eye, then the right eye, then a smile, and it unlocks.
Well, and that's sort of what the captchas are doing now. Yeah.
Right.
The captchas are trying to prove that it's you and not a computer reading it, and that's why captchas are getting harder for us to do, because it's getting easier for the computers to do.
Right. And the other thing is, because so many people are using cell phones now, they can keep your information, your biometric data, on your phone so it never goes off your phone. So, for example, when I open up PayPal, it randomly asks me for a PIN, which is saved on my phone, or my fingerprint, which is saved on my phone. So,
you know, one thing, though, I mean, there's one law in this universe that's, I think, not possible to overcome, and that's Murphy's Law.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, right now, Murphy's Law applies in individual cases. Your personal information might be broken into. That would be a catastrophe for you personally or for me. But at some point, we're going to reach where the entire country, everyone's financial records will be broken, and you know that will cause a financial disruption that is nationally, maybe even internationally, catastrophic.
Well, and that's why over the years, the industry has moved to stronger and stronger encryption, longer key length. So every time there's some weakness, we've gone from MD5 to DES to AES, yeah. And now we're at AES 256. And so we're getting longer key lengths and better encryption. Elliptic curve, ECC, is now the latest big thing in encryption. And that will continue as the computers gets faster. The encryption methods will change as well.
Well, and yes, but you still end up with the problem of who owns your data.
Yeah.
So I had this discussion this week with some people. One of the things Apple announced is that their watch does all kinds of health things. Yep. Everything from your heart rate to your diabetes to everything now. Well, okay, but do you trust Apple with your data? And that trust comes on several levels. Is there going to be a breach? Apple may not sell it. You may trust Apple not to sell your data, but there may be a breach. And how good are they in the back end of that? And if Apple does sell your data, then you go to get a insurance, and they say, I'm sorry, you have a pre-existing condition.
Right. I don't want to be in the position where I have to trust anyone.
Well, you got to trust somebody.
No, you don't.
Well, I guess if you're not going to... I'm sorry. Stay on the line, Tom. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with... Michael Oden. Steve Ray. Me, Nick Francesco. Tom from Brighton and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
We're headbanging it out.
We're headbanging. We should pay attention to
Michael. I'm waiting for Pat to start singing, and she wasn't.
Exactly. And we still have Tom on the line? Tom, you still there?
Yes.
Excellent. I'm sorry, where were we?
We were trying to solve the world's problems.
Right. But yeah, it's going to be, there's going to be a huge sea change at some point. And you know, you're right. But you still have to trust somebody. Even if you keep your data on your computer, you're trusting Microsoft or Google or somebody or the Linux distribution or Apple.
Or the hardware manufacturers. There was that scare a few months ago about Chinese Secret Service were inserting chips into motherboards.
Yep. And so you're still trusting somebody somewhere along the line. Even if you just keep all your data on, I have a friend who keeps all of his private data on a thumb drive, and only plugs it into the computer when he wants to do something with those data.
But more and more things are going to the cloud, and the more universal something is, the more susceptible it is to universal destroying of data across very large numbers of people.
As it becomes more centralized, yeah.
Right, it's exactly right. Now, take a look at the Google outage that we just had. Now, I know a lot of people at Google, and I know how many people are doing security there. But even so, the possibility certainly exists that there can be an issue at some point. But even if it's not an issue like that, even if it's just an outage like we had last Sunday, that disrupts a million people. It disrupted me because I use NPass with very heavy encryption. Still keeps the data up on my Google Drive. So any changes I made on one machine did not propagate to the other machines during the time of the outage. And that can be a problem.
Well, obviously, the bunch of us talking right now, we're not going to solve this problem. We'd be making a lot more money if we could solve it.
Ain't that the truth?
So, but you guys do a great job, and I appreciate your comments.
Thanks Tom. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I read about, I decided to keep all my money in the couch cushions.
Oh, yeah.
Because I still earn interest. Every time someone sits down, they add to it.
They add. Nickel here, dime here. It's more than you're making off the bank these days.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is, I believe, Walter from Greece, New York. Hi, Walter. What's up?
Hi there, gentlemen. Great. Always hear your show on the air.
Thanks.
I'm going back a week. I believe you presented an exploit, I think might have been with a kernel that affects even Linux machines, that there would be a rootkit and there's like a worm, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'd like to know its relationship to the Security Tango. What I'm getting at specifically is RK Hunter. Now, I'm running Ubuntu 16.04 on one machine, and on my other machines, I'm running MX 18.2. And I've loaded down what they have, and the Ubuntu machine has RK Hunter 2.4.2. The MX machines have 2.4.4. And I know that there's 2.4.6. The question is, should I be always uninstalling the one I got from Synaptic Package Manager, go to the RK Hunter site and download the latest version, something so I can get that extra protection against rootkits?
Yep. Here's the issue. For those of you who are not running Linux, let me explain what's going on. When you have a particular version of Linux, you have a particular set of programs that run under that version. If you're not running the latest version of Linux, you may not have the latest versions of particular pieces of software like RK Hunter. And RK Hunter is the rootkit hunter, the thing that searches for rootkits and backdoors and local exploits and all of that nonsense. And so clearly you want this to be an updated and up to date product,
which is true for all the OSs too. You always want to make sure you have the latest security patches and the latest anti programs looking for the bad programs.
Right. So one thing you can do, Walter, is yes, you can download the latest version from the internet and install that instead of or on top of, I guess, the one that is currently built into your system.
Right.
But that there may be more to do that. There may be you may need to run update LPW request. You may need to run a couple of other things. But the first thing I would do before I do any of that is do run as root, of course.
Yes.
RK Hunter space dash dash prop upd P R O P U P D.
Okay.
And that updates all of the definitions and things that are underneath the system, and see if that updated to the latest version.
Okay, PROP update. PROP update.
PROP UPD.
UPD. Okay.
Right, and if you do man RK Hunter, that'll be one of the things you'll see there.
Okay, very good. Because I always do the RK Hunter space dash dash update, and there's no updates, and I'm thinking, okay, should I be moving on ahead? You know, as I say, moving up to another grade, but this makes a heck of a lot easier then.
Yeah, try that, see if that works, and then, of course, you can sudo RK Hunter dash dash check.
Okay.
Right, and that actually does the full checking.
Okay.
So what you would do is RK Hunter's installed. You do the sudo, you always start with sudo RK Hunter, right? So you do dash dash prop upd, then dash dash update, then dash dash check.
Okay, very good. I also
run rootkits.
Sophos antivirus.
Sure.
And does that include a rootkit, or will that also check for Trojans and worms as well as rootkits?
I do not believe it does.
No?
I know it checks for some malware. I don't know.
It checks for malware, but I don't think it checks for rootkits.
I think they might have a separate rootkit program.
Yeah.
Rootkits are especially hard because they get into the root before the other programs are loaded. So they're very easy to hide. And quite frequently, you need to have a clean OS on another disk that you boot from in order to scan and delete rootkits from your main OS.
Right. Sophos does have an anti-rootkit scanner, but it is a separate product.
Okay. All right. I may consider doing that then, too. You can't be too safe, I think.
No, you're absolutely right. You cannot be paranoid enough.
All right. Excellent. Thank you very, very much.
All right. Thank you. Have fun.
Or just because you are paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
That's the truth. And they are out to get you. The fact is that living out on the internet these days is very, very dangerous. No matter what else you think about it, it is very, very dangerous. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joel from Pittsford, New York. Hi there. What's up?
Hi, guys. I have a question for Steve. Steve, iTunes used to have the functionality where you could organize your apps from your iPhone and iPad, and I missed that. I'm wondering if there is a PC app, perhaps, that duplicates that functionality?
Not that I know of. You just do it on your device itself now. That's one of the reasons I removed it from the program.
Yeah, I know.
So you do it by hand
now.
Not
as easy as it was.
On your computer, you got a picture where you could drag your apps around, and now you do it right on the device where you tap and drag your apps around. You use your finger.
I know how to do that on the devices. It's just... Yep. I found it a lot more convenient to be able to see all the apps.
Especially if you had a lot of folders.
And then move them wherever you wanted to. So, okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, well, I'll dig around, but I haven't heard of any.
Yeah. Okay. All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
One of the things we see is you get so many apps on your device that you never use them all. And so I'm sort of at that point now. I don't know where apps are, so I just search.
Right.
And then every now and then, so when the new major Next OS comes out, I'll probably erase it and then load the OS and then just load the apps I want to use instead of copying every app that I don't use.
Right. Google has a new this screwed me up badly. Google has a new program that essentially a hearing aid. It's a sound amplifier. And it you can tune it so that it only amplifies the sounds you're having trouble hearing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The problem is when you install it, it's not an app. It's built into the sound section of the settings.
Hmm.
So you have to go in there to activate it.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But you have to do that. So I installed it, couldn't find it, tried to reinstall it. It said it was already installed. Searched for it. It shows up as if it were an app. And I uninstalled it, reinstalled it again. And then I finally, because I'm not that bright, it was only at that point that I went back and said, how do I activate sound amplifier? And said, oh, you just go into settings and blah, 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 blah. Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Very, very nice.
We just had a customer this morning. His niece was playing with his watch and did something, and he didn't know how to get out of it. And the question becomes, how would I have known to get out of that?
Well, you wouldn't.
You wouldn't. You ask your niece. So, that was funny. He walks into the store, and there's a couple of teenagers there. They're looking at new computers with their parents. And he walks right up to them. Can I ask you something as a young person?
You people under 30.
Yeah.
How do I operate this machine?
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know what to do with my computer, so I give it to my granddaughter. I'm sure Tom from Brighton is still listening, so he'll like this one. Firefox and Chrome both received updates this week, adding security and privacy tools that help with password management and help block sites to track users. Mozilla's Firefox browser introduced an enhanced tracking protection feature that blocks over 1,000 third-party companies that track online activity and personal information. Firefox users can add the feature by updating their browser. The anti-tracking will be set by default. We believe that in order to truly protect people, we need to establish a new standard that puts people's privacies first, wrote Firefox Senior Vice President Dave Camp in a blog post on Tuesday. The feature blocks cookies from known third-party trackers. It's unclear, however, if the feature prevents a different type of profile called browser fingerprinting. Firefox also updated its Facebook container, now at 2.0, browser extension, for desktop users. The extension debuted last year and is designed to isolate your web activity from Facebook by running the site in a container, which means now it can't go out and look at what else you're doing on the web. The 2.0 update further restricts Facebook's ability to follow you around the web and harvest user data from sites that display Facebook share and like buttons. Firefox has also made available its password management tool called Firefox Lockwise, formerly known as Firefox Lockbox. Firefox Lockbox. I like that. Okay. To desktop users, previously is available only on Android and iOS. Firefox also added an email address management tool. And what's clever about this addition to the browser is the Mozilla will monitor an email address is saved and alert you if a breach occurs with your email address in it. Google Chrome 75 is not a major release. However, it's notable because it addresses weak passwords by porting its Chrome's built-in password manager to the Android OS version of its browser. Now, Android users of Chrome OS have support for Google Suggest a Strong Password feature. The way it works is when using the Chrome browser on Android or other OS platforms, Chrome will prompt you to generate a strong and unique password using its built-in password manager. The Chrome password manager has also been updated with an on-the-fly password lookup feature. Chrome 75 also adds a beta reader mode that distills a page down to what Google assumes is the featured text and art. Gone are pesky ads and other extraneous distractions. The feature is not on by default, and you will need to visit chrome://flags/#enable reader mode to enable it. So is your browser securely up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
It's a catch-22 that we always tell people you should load the latest updates, but every time Microsoft releases an update, there are problems.
Right.
And, the current update, some people are running into problems getting it to load, or they can't reboot their computer after it's done. So people are getting gun-shy about installing updates, but not then you don't have this massive security hole you need to patch.
Right.
And I remember what I thought of before with patches. We're in April.
Yeah. No, we're in June.
We're in June, yeah. So it was the May Windows update. It fixed 83 problems in Windows 10.
Yeah.
Zero in Windows 7.
Yep.
But it's all the same code base. So,
yep.
So those same 83 problems exist in Windows 7 that they aren't fixing.
But people insist that Windows 7 is still being updated. They're wrong. This proves it, but they keep insisting. I'll tell you one. Here's a security thing you should do. You should run two browsers on your desktop or laptop. You should run Chrome for everything except Facebook. And then you should run Facebook in Firefox. Why? Because Firefox has that little fence, that little area that it cordons off Firefox. And also, one of the things Firefox does is set a universal cookie. That's how they follow. It's one of the ways they follow you from site to site. So if your universal cookie's on a browser that you're not using for everything else, Facebook can't follow you. Facebook is the worst.
As so many sites have a Facebook like button, and the same with the Twitter and the Reddit and the LinkedIn and Instagram, all those little social buttons, that Facebook knows you went to that page because that page loaded a like button. And right. So what happens is you log into Facebook, you do something, and then you close the window. You're still logged into Facebook, and every page you went to posts that you went to that page. So we hear stories all the time about, you know, I looked up cow costumes for Halloween, and now every time I go to my Facebook feed, it's full of costume shops. Well, yeah, because it knows you did that because you were still logged in. So log out of Facebook when you leave the window, and then it warns you. Are you sure you want to do that? You should stay logged in.
Yes.
Just not use Facebook.
Well, or if you're using something like AdBlock Plus, it has the ability to block social media buttons.
Yep.
And so you would be able to do that pretty easily. I believe uBlock Origin does it as well. There is a for Chrome, there is an add-on called Stop Social that I'm currently in the process of adding right now. Well, maybe not, because it seems to be a Russian site. Okay, maybe not then. All right. Okay. All right. Maybe not. Yeah. Okay. I'm getting really paranoid in my old age. You know, I truly am, and I admit it. It may be perfectly fine. It might be perfectly fine. But I don't want to play that game anymore. I'll look at other ways to get rid of that. And see what happens. But yeah, I don't think I'll be adding that since it comes from a site in Russia. At least they're honest about it. It's a .ru site, and that means Russia. And I'm not installing that. That's like, there was a commercial, a great set of commercials. They had a commercial on every minute at 3 a.m., which is when I'm still up, of course. And it's for some antivirus system. And the guy hasn't shaved in 2 weeks. And has a thick Russian accent. Yeah, there's the guy I trust. That's a guy I trust with my computer. No problem. I'll be installing that instantly.
Yep.
And I get it, but no, not going to happen.
For earlier caller Joel, I did find a program called the APower Manager from apowersoft.com that claims to be a mobile device manager for Android or iOS, and it runs on Windows or Mac for managing your photos and videos and apps and everything. So that's something to try. Don't know anything about it. Just found it. It got good reviews on CNET, which is where I got linked to it. It does look like it is commercial, though. 30-day money-back guarantee. $20 a month or $70 for a lifetime membership.
Oh, that's not bad. All right. Well, that music tells us that we have come to the end of another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I particularly want to thank Michael Oden, who stepped in as Dave became slightly incapacitated. And I hope that Dave is going to take care of himself and go home and relax. I want to thank Steve Ray for staying awake through the entire program. Well done, you. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week.
Took me a whole bottle.
What?
It took me a whole bottle to stay awake.
Yeah. But you stayed awake, and it's a bottle of soda, by the way, not alcohol. And
that would have put me to sleep.
Right. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. It's 56 minutes after the hour, and we will see you in just 166 hours.